Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
They don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I could drag it into the bathroom and drown in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. Tonight on the big program, we're going to be talking with Pennsylvania State Senator Vince Hughes about the whole voucher thing. He has gotten into a heated debate back and forth with the folks over at the Tea Party think tank, the Commonwealth Foundation. It'll be interesting to kind of get into that. Because, look, at the end of the day, the Commonwealth Foundation, you know, the big moneyed people, which, you know, they're an interesting story all in of themselves, you know, collecting money off of the backs of injured workers. But, you know, here's the really interesting thing. They've got all this money to promote their privatization schemes. Evidently, they sent 17 roses to every member of the state legislature. I can think of a lot better things to do with the money that it would have taken to send roses to every member of the state legislature here. I can think of a lot of things better to do, but that's what they chose to do. I could think of, you know, hey, maybe help fix some of the schools that are having problems. But understand, the billionaire class doesn't want to fix our education system. They want to destroy what's left of it. They want to destroy it so they can privatize it and they can profitize it. It doesn't get any simpler than that, folks. The fact, they want you to believe that they really care. Really care. Oh, we really care about those poor kids. We care. Yeah, what they're pushing will harm the vast majority of them and make things actually worse for the vast majority. Now, a few lottery winners will come out of it, a handful, much like the Newt Gingrich, Donald Trump, apprentice child labor edition. A few will get the golden ticket. A handful will win the lottery prize, just like playing the lottery. You put your dollar down, one or two people may win. And that's what they want for education. That's the conservative worldview. So it'll be interesting to talk to Vince Hughes about that. Second hour, Pennsylvania Democratic Chairman Jim Byrne going to be here talking about the redistricting scheme. Today is NAFTA Day. The signing of NAFTA happened today. And NAFTA turns 18. So we're going to talk to Dr. Steven Herzenberg, Executive Director of the Keystone Research Center. Back, 18 years ago, he did some work on that. We're going to get his thoughts on now that NAFTA is an adult, what he thinks of it. In the third hour, today it's Time to Talk Day, the day that, across the country you highlight domestic violence. So we're going to talk to a couple of folks about domestic violence. Ruth Smith, Executive Director of the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence, and Ann Burke, President and Co-Founder of Love Is Not Abuse Coalition, and the founder of the Lindsay Ann Burke Memorial Fund. Her story is just heartbreaking. You know, it's one of those things as a parent that I got to tell you, I don't know how you wake up from. Her daughter was killed by a boyfriend, murdered by this boyfriend. And, you know, you go and you, I can't imagine not looking back and regretting every decision that you probably made going through all that. I know I probably would. So it'll be interesting talking to them. Also, your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Today, interesting day in history. I have to start right at the very beginning. Today is my wife's birthday, so happy birthday, honey. I'm not going to give the year. I'm not allowed to know that. But I guess she's 29 again, so good. Happy birthday. Hope you had a wonderful day. Love you very much. So out of the way, on this day she had to be born, the day John Lennon was shot and killed outside of his apartment by Mark David Chapman, who now, you know, is okay. He's better now. You know, he wants to get out, so we'll see how that works out for him. It was 1980. I mean, can you believe it's been that long ago? It's been 31 years. Wow. Just amazing, amazing stuff. Anyway, today, well, I don't know if you've been following the news. There was a shooting at Virginia Tech today. A policeman and another person found dead, and what I've gathered to this point, they have the shooter, I guess, is dead as well. Not 100% sure that at this point, but that's what my first thoughts are. So there you go. Again, you know, you look at this insanity, and you go, more guns? Is that what we need? And I guess I can see it from two directions. You know, the cop did have a gun after all, but I can see it from two directions. You know, if you know the criminal has the gun, then everybody else is victim. But what if, you know, it's one of those tough situations. Also, in the news yesterday, which I found interesting, when Obama was in Kansas to give his big speech, the Secret Service went to this guy Neil Jednorowski. Good luck saying that a couple of times fast. Went to his house and took all of his guns and took his handcuffs and his high security handcuffs. Also took into custody four of his guns. Evidently he had decided that he was going to call the Secretary of State of Kansas, the Highway Patrol there in Kansas, and the county sheriff and tell them that you need to come help me. I'm going to go arrest that president. I'm going to go get me that Kenyan. Who'll give me that Muslim? I'm going to lock him up. Because Neil is a birther, and, you know, he wanted everyone to come in and help him. Turns out that the Secret Service didn't take too kindly to that, and they came and took his stuff and said, you know what, relax. Now he's saying if Obama comes back to Kansas, I'm going to do it again. And you go, really, are you then? Haven't we gotten over this birther thing at some point? I mean, don't the brain cells return at some point where you go, okay, you know, the facts are here. It's right in front of us. He has released the birth certificate. A Republican governor has said, yeah, that's it. The hospital said, yep, here's what we got. At this point, don't you just let it go? I mean, really, at some point, one would hope, but there are some who are so entrenched in their little world, in that little bubble world where facts don't mean anything to them, where reality doesn't matter. It's all in their window. There's that black guy, that Kenyan in the White House. It's insane. And, you know, last night I had to go stop off at the store on the way home from the show. The kids were sick and wife wanted me to pick a couple of things up, but I ran into a guy I haven't seen for a year or two. And we always stood and talked for about a half an hour. And he's like, you know, things are just going nuts. The more insanity you see, guys like this, the birthers, all this Tea Party stuff, all this insanity, what's it building up to? And we were standing talking about, you know, what the fears of what's coming down, especially when you look at what's going on with all the occupations. If these were Tea Party types, like, this, you know, would we be in big trouble? Because you haven't seen many cases of real violence coming out of the occupation movement. The violence has been perpetrated against the occupiers. They want to peacefully assemble. And, you know, as we were talking last night, I said, you know, my thought in all this is you've rattled the cages. The people have rattled the cages and said, hey, enough is enough. We're fed up. We're ticked off. What are you going to do? What are the owners of the country going to do? What are the billionaire class going to do? Are they going to continue to use the means of coercion, the police, the tear gas, and the big fences to try and quash this? Or are they going to actually make some structural changes? Are we going to see a better distribution of the wealth of this country? Will we see the wealth that workers create back in their hands? Will we see opportunity? Because like this guy was saying, he goes, you know, my generation, and he's a little bit younger than I am, he said, you know, we kind of just took everything. You know, okay, we're going to get a little less than our parents, but we still had jobs to go to. And he's going, you know, he's telling me his friends, and they're struggling. And people are upset, and they're losing their homes. And it's at that point where you go, when you have this desperation, where do you go? Well, you're seeing people going to the streets. That's the first reaction. The question now becomes, we've changed the discussion. The discussion has been changed away from how do we make business? Because remember, during 2010, it was all about being more business friendly. We need to create jobs by being more business friendly, by having less regulations. And the Republicans are sticking to that. But the conversation nationally has kind of changed. Now we're talking about income inequality. Now we're talking about people without health care. Now we're talking about the big thieves on Wall Street filling their pockets and everybody else having to pay for that. And I saw this thing today that just made me laugh. In D.C., the people of Occupy D.C., they took a big red carpet and they all laid down on the sidewalk and put the red carpet over the top themselves. Saying, you know, you walked on our rights, now walk on us, which I think is brilliant. And, you know, there's part of me that you has to think that some of those people going into this Chamber of Commerce holiday party in D.C. Had to be thinking, well, why not? I walk all over you every other day of the year. Why not now? But, you know, that would be bad messaging. But there's part of me that just said, you know, I don't think they would have any problem walking right on top of those people. They do it every day symbolically through the policies that they pursue. So, you know, why not literally walk on them? And I think it was just a brilliant stunt and caught my attention because I think it's right. We've been walked on, we've been tromped on, we've been kicked. And at some point, people stand up and begin to fight back. Not in a violent way. I mean, you look at what happened in these occupations where the police came down with an iron fist. I personally don't know that I could absorb the kind of abuse that they were talking about, that they were taking. You know, if someone hit me, I'd probably hit them back. But these people took it. I mean, that's the remarkable part in all of this. And the remarkable part, I guess, is that we've, as a society, become used to taking it. And I've likened it to Stockholm syndrome for the working class. We're used to getting beaten. We're used to getting kicked to the curb. We're used to getting less. So we just kind of put our heads down and take it like we somehow deserve it. And, you know, we were talking a little bit and I go, you know, you judge a society like any other. How you treat the elderly, how you treat the children, how you treat the poor. And you look all across the country. Where these Republicans have taken control of these states, what are they doing? Oh, they're cutting Medicaid programs, they're cutting school funding, they're cutting everything that helps the most vulnerable. And I look at Ohio. I mean, Ohio is the perfect example. We're going to go after workers' rights. We're going to go after their low-income state health insurance. They're going to go out and cut $1 billion from education. They're going to do all this stuff. They're going to cut Medicaid programs. And I just saw this story today. That it was this survey of I think it was 385 nursing homes there in Ohio, and they found that these 385 nursing homes have gotten rid of something like 2,800 workers from the July through September survey, because the state cut about 6% of the budget to the state's Medicaid program. And understand, you know. If you don't have the money, and it's one thing to rail against these nursing homes, but it's another thing to, it's you got to look at what, why. And why is because the state cut funding. Now, I had lunch with my mother-in-law the other day, and she was telling me about one of these emails that she got saying, you know, why don't we swap prisoners with nursing home patients? She was going through the email saying, you know, in prison, they get, you know, they get three hot meals a day. They get a shower every day. They've got colored TV. They got all these things. While someone in a nursing home may be bathed once a day, once a week, they may get three cold meals a day. And on a certain level, she's right. I mean, what nursing homes have turned into and what they've been for, what they had been in the past, are just places to warehouse folks. And the more we cut funding and the more we do these things, the worse it's going to be for us. And the last story, I'm going to talk about this, I think, all day, because I think my hero of the day is Jeffrey Karnitz. Jeffrey is, he's a Scott Walker supporter. In Wisconsin, he decided that he was going to go up to one of the places where they are signing the recall petitions and give them a piece of his mind. So he pulled up and he gave him a piece of his mind. He told those people what he thought. And then he pulled up to where they had the folks signing the petition. And they gave him the two petitions and he took his pen. He scribbled all over it. Basically ruining the entire, both petitions. Scribbled his pen all over it. Well, when he handed it back and kind of gave him a, there you go, here you go, see how you like this. They said, well, we like it a lot, and your license plate number we are writing down because you have just committed a felony punishable up to a year and a half in prison, 2 years extended supervision, and, of course, a $10,000 fine. So there you go, brother. Good luck in prison. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Yes, it is all about the children, even after they're born. Rick Smith.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. A new report called Corporate Tax Dodging in the 50 States, 2008 to 2010, shows many major highly profitable corporations paid no state income taxes in at least one of the last 3 years. This massive corporate tax dodging shifts the tax burden more to working families and contributes to the budget crisis hitting many state governments. Matthew Gardner, Executive Director of the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy, is co-author of the report.
That 68 of these companies like DuPont, Intel, Wells Fargo, and GE, have figured out ways not only to pay zero in state taxes, but to get tax refunds despite being hugely profitable over the last 3 years.
Gardner says common sense reforms by the states could make sure that corporations pay their fair shares, but many state governments continue to give these corporations tax breaks. If Congress doesn't move fast to extend federal unemployment benefits, 2 million jobless workers could lose their lifeline. Chris Owens, executive director of the National Employment Law Project, says the damage done should Congress fail to extend the benefits goes far beyond those 2 million unemployed Americans.
6 million will be affected in that manner over the course of the next year. This will be a huge body blow to the economy. It would suck $90 billion in revenues out of the economy. It could cost us 500,000 jobs that would otherwise be created or maintained.
Washington, D.C. Take Back the Capitol protesters focused on lobbyist offices to disrupt the money-influenced politics as usual Wednesday. Jesse Russell reports.
Rain didn't keep protesters away on Wednesday as a march intended to shut down the infamous K Street in Washington, D.C. went forward. Thousands of protesters descended on the street most commonly known for housing the offices of a large number of Capitol lobbyists. The K Street action was the second day of mass protests in the city. Other actions have included an Occupy the Capitol rally where protesters from all 50 states converged on congressional offices to speak with members of their state delegations. Some representatives, such as Republican Representative Sean Duffy from Wisconsin, took time to meet with a handful of the protesters. Others, such as Republican Representative Paul Ryan, also from Wisconsin, closed their doors on constituents. Today we'll see more action at the offices of key congressional leaders. The protests have been mostly peaceful, with only a handful of K Street protesters being voluntarily arrested yesterday.
This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. This Is What Democracy Looks Like, Wisconsin's Worker Uprising, is a one-hour documentary from Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
In Wisconsin, they're standing in the snow, wondering where the work is gonna go. In Wisconsin, in the middle of the night, Governor Walker legislated away their rights. In Wisconsin.
You gotta love what's going on there in Wisconsin. I mean, at some point you've gotta wake up and realize that you can't go scribbling on the recall petition, ding dong. Jeez, oh man. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. I mean, really, did you really think that, well, I can do whatever I want because I'm special. And what it is, you know, if you listen, a couple weeks ago, we were talking about, on the Facebook, on one of the Facebook pages, they were saying, oh, well, you know, we're gonna line our bird cages with recall petitions, and we're gonna go out and take petitions and heat our home with them, and you know, talking about all of these things that they were gonna do that really is against the law there in Wisconsin. But, you know, feeling, you know, hey, all this bravado and all of this talking up, what's it going to get this guy? It's going to get this guy up to a year and a half in jail, up to 2 years of supervised release, and also $10,000 fine. All for being stupid. And that's really what it was. I mean, he could have simply just driven right on by. But he chose, I'm going to show those people. I'm going to show them how important I am. I'm going to go scribble on their petition. Oh, wow. Showed me. Anyway, according to a report by the Pennsylvania Department of State Campaign Finance, their website, the folks at Student First PAC, they have contributed close to $5.3 million to the folks on the Senate Education Committee in proposing these vouchers. And pushing this idea of a golden ticket. And, you know, I find it amazing that you've got people who went through the public school system, got a good education, are now looking back and saying, well, that's not good enough. Let's destroy it and privatize it. And we were going to have Senator Vince Hughes on. Not sure what's going on there, but we're just going to move on. But he was ticked off about the Tea Party think tank, the people over at the Commonwealth Foundation, who sent out an email calling schools that were underperforming, calling them hellholes and future jails and leading to future jail stays and welfare. And instead of figuring out a way of, you know, of fixing those few schools, understand, they're saying somewhere, I think 141 of the something like 3,300 schools in this state, they are considering underperforming or failing. I mean, that is a very, very small amount. Now, to me, the problem has very little to do with the school or the teacher or any of that. It has everything to do with the socioeconomic class of what's going on around there. You know, where I grew up when I was a kid was at the bottom of the economic ladder. In fact, it's where they put the ladder on top of. And the school had lots of problems. And the kids had lots of problems. Not in the classroom, though. Outside the classroom. Now, you know, I was talking to somebody the other day, and I said, you know, in Berks County, for instance, of the 18 school districts that are in Berks County, one of them is failing. And that's the Redding School District, considered the poorest community in the country. They are the poorest community in the country. And that's the only school district that's failing. Gee, I wonder why that is. Well, a lot of that has to do with, and this is where I think Gingrich on a certain level is right. I think his head is kind of going in the right direction. You need to get those people jobs. Yes, the parents, not the kids, the parents, so that they can provide for their kids. And yes, the kids can see their parents going off to work and can see the value of hard work. I'm in agreement there. But this idea of going, hey, let's take that six-year-old and let him clean the toilets, it just seems dumb to me. Why not have the parent come in, get that decent job, and be able to pay for their kids and provide that role model? What's going on is we have, and I would say in a lot of ways, constructed policies designed to make that situation worse and to make sure that that stays where it is. Now, from the education side of things, the Reading School District, according to my wife, actually, said that the Reading High School has its own police force. When you have to provide a police force, there's a problem. That has nothing to do with the school. That has everything to do with the home. And this is something I've been talking about for a long time. Nobody is talking about the structural problems with those handful of failing schools, which is completely outside of the control of the school. Has everything to do with the neighborhood, has everything to do with the socioeconomic conditions. But we don't want to talk about that, because that's the hard fix. That's the tough stuff. That's actually committing resources, committing energy. That's actually rolling up your sleeves and getting down the business. Now, in 96, when Gingrich and Clinton did the whole welfare reform thing, at the beginning, I was in favor of it. Because the talk was, we're going to create a program, a welfare to work program. We're going to help people get jobs. We're going to help them with all of the structural obstacles that are in their way to get from welfare to work. Because where I grew up, we weren't on the bus line. In fact, to get on the bus line, you had to walk 3 or 4 miles. I'm in favor of saying, okay, well, we're going to get you back to work. We're going to get people into the workforce because I believe you have to work. There are therapeutic qualities to work. There's self-esteem qualities to work. Absolutely need to have it. Never been in favor of handout programs and probably never will be in favor of them. Need to get people to work. But that's harder to do than it is to say. Because there are tons of structural problems associated with low-income folks. Most of them come from broken homes. One parent. My mother was I was a single parent. She was a single parent raising me. You got child care was a major obstacle. Now, the solution, like, oh, we need vouchers, to me is just dumb. It takes me back to when I was a kid, and they were saying, you know, Busing's going to be the answer. We need to take poor white kids and ship them over to poor black neighborhoods and poor black kids and ship them over to poor white neighborhoods. You're still talking about poverty. You're still talking about taking a kid, white, black, green, orange, I don't care. You're talking about taking a poor kid from one side of town and taking him to a poor neighborhood on the other side of town. It was dumb then. It's even dumber now. Problems are still the problems, socioeconomic. There are certain skill sets that people need to have to lead middle class lives. You need to see, they talk about Donald Trump and, oh, he's this icon of a figure. You know, his family was very wealthy. He started out on third base. Here's a guy who was, he didn't hit the triple, but that's where he landed. He had all that invisible capital, all of the stuff that you and I will never get just because of who his parents were. And a lot of people are very fortunate to have that ability to say, you know, hey, my father was so-and-so. That gets people in the door. So when Trump said, my father was so-and-so Trump, they said, oh, you're a Trump boy. Oh, yes, come right in. You must be a chippo of the old block. And I mean, they make it sound like Donald pulled himself up by his bootstraps. No, he didn't. It's all in how you frame this stuff, folks. And taking away that one thing that has helped people over the years, education. That one thing that's given everybody a shot, education. Taking that away, I think is horribly destructive. Because understand, with these vouchers, with this privatization scheme, there's no guarantees here. There's no guarantee if my kid gets that golden ticket that my kid's going to get to go to any of these schools. There's no guarantee that if I get this wonderful voucher, there's going to be a school. And if there is, they may not qualify. And even in that scenario, I'll leave you with this. Even with that scenario, the ability to pick and choose, these schools that we're told are these are the models are still failing. The cyber charter schools, all I hear is advertisement for cyber charter. Oh, how wonderful it is. Two of the 11 that they looked at passed the PSSA exams. Two of 11. Now you look at Berks County, like the Reading Eagle article said. Out of the 18 school districts there, just one. Because of their socioeconomic condition. What's the excuse for the cyber charter people? Huh, I wonder. I'm going to take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
By dumping unlimited sums of their corporate cash into our election campaigns, thus giving them a far bigger voice than us real-life persons. Missoulians, of course, cannot single-handedly overrule the Supremes, but they can be in the forefront of a grassroots movement demanding a constitutional amendment to reverse the court's perverse ruling. And that's just what Missoulians did, with a whopping 75% of voters calling on Congress to send such an amendment to the states for prompt ratification. This is Jim Hightower saying, hey, we can all be Missoulians. People in California, Colorado, Maine, Vermont, Wisconsin, and elsewhere are pushing such resolutions. For information on how to get your city and state to join in this call, go to wethepeoplecampaign.org/toolkit. Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, hightowerlowdown.org.
Exposing GOP half-truths, lies, and hypocrisy every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Rick Smith.
Fight the rich, free the poor. I can hear my right-winger friends now going, oh, there you are again, talking about the poor. What about me? What about me? Well, the president's trying to pass a middle-class tax break. The Republicans want no part of it. No part of it whatsoever. In fact, the Republicans seem to be fine, you know, fighting for the top 1%. And in fact, to use a quote from the president's speech on the 6th, he said, for the top 1/100th of 1%, the average income is now $27 million per year. He said the typical CEO who used to earn about 30 times more than his or her worker now earns 110 times. And I've seen stats putting that up to two. And when you look at the Fortune 500s, 300-400 times more. He said, yet over the last decade, the incomes of most Americans have actually fallen by about 6%. So it brings me to the question, you know, what is rich today? When people start talking about, oh, that guy's rich, or, oh, that's the rich guy. What, in our mind, what would make you feel rich? How much? $100,000, $2,000, $5,000, what, $1 million a year? Well, according to a new Gallup poll released today, most people think about $150,000 a year would make them rich. And I'm going, really? That little? Because they're, at the end of the day, like it or not, believe it or not, the story from yesterday. And the more I find out about it, you know, the sadder this whole thing has become. This woman who killed herself in the Texas Department of Health and Human Services office there in Laredo, Texas. 7-hour standoff with your two kids, and the kids are in there texting about what's going on. I mean, I can't imagine the desperation. And, you know, I've spent some good time thinking about, you know, my childhood, thinking back when I was a kid and some of the really rough times. And I think we all do that. We reach back to our experience and say, you know, when things were tough, you know, how did mom and dad handle it? How did I handle it? You know, how did this go? And I remember, you know, there were a couple of times that, you know, I think back on as, you know, not at the time thinking anything of it, but when in retrospect you look back and go, man, that was kind of an uneasy time. And, you know, right before my mom died, there was a period where, you know, we were really in a bind, really in a struggle, going to end up having to move from the house we were in to somewhere in a much, much worse neighborhood, if that were possible. And I remember the desperation. I remember the depression she was in, and I remember all of the tension. And there were a couple of times where we would just drive around aimlessly, with nowhere really to go, just kind of trying to find a way. And that was kind of her way of saying, how do I deal with this? And I remember, I mean, my mother was only 29 years old at the time. Here with this, you know, this 13-year-old kid trying to figure out, where am I going to go from here? And I got to be honest, I cannot fathom the desperation of looking at these kids, this woman looking at these kids going, I can't do it. Now, they've gone in and they've talked to some of the neighbors, and they said that this woman had tried repeatedly, had gone down repeatedly to try and get some help. In fact, the two kids walked down to the welfare office with no shoes on. I mean, we are talking, they had nothing. They lived in a trailer that was 6 foot wide by 18 feet long. And that was it. And they were repeatedly turned away. Now, the Texas Department of Health and Human Services, they're saying, well, you know, we didn't deny her. She just didn't have the right paperwork. And I'm going, you're going to turn someone away for food? Because they didn't fill out the 18-page? Then why do we have an obesity problem among the people who say we have a hunger problem? And again, you know, like I said, it was... a lot of it has to do with what these people are eating. And it's feast and famine. And it's just absolutely disgusting to me that this guy who purports to be some grand Christian would go down this path. But I guess it's not surprising. He's bought and paid for. He's the same guy who said we should do health care, shouldn't depend on luck. I don't know how you can argue with that. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Your thoughts, comments, questions, something on your mind, let me know right back after this.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
For 75 years, AFSCME has protected basic workers' rights, a living wage, health benefits, safe working conditions. These aren't privileges to be taken away. They're rights to be protected. This is Dave Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13. Public services and workers' rights are under attack like never before. But the Main Street movement is pulling together. Nurses, firefighters, cops, teachers, students, and neighbors. Ordinary Americans are fighting back and making history. From victories in Wisconsin, Ohio, and right here in Pennsylvania, AFSCME was there. AFSCME will always be there. Coming after workers and their unions, it's a shameful agenda for Wall Street politicians, but AFSCME's been in this fight for 75 years. We're not about to stop now. Join the Main Street movement at AFSCME13.org. And from all of us at AFSCME, happy holidays.
AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? I said, you know, he just mentioned his name saying, well, he's an up-and-coming star in the Republican House of Representatives. Really? A deadbeat? That's your star? So he's asking for a boatload of money. I'm not going to give him anything. But at the end, he says, P.S., Rush Limbaugh and I are working together to bring common sense to Washington. And I get this picture of him and Rush sitting down at the Oxy table there, getting ready to dope up, saying, what kind of common sense solutions can we come up with? Oh, let's not pay our child support. There's a good idea. Scumbag. Jeez, oh man. And you know, these hypocrites who tell, oh, how wonderful they are. They're the first ones to throw you under the bus or throw your kids under the bus. And I look at Gingrich. Yes, let's get those 5-year-olds to work. And then, then he says, well, you know, my father taught me this. My father, you know, told me that here's a couple of dollars to wash the car. That's a little different than what you proposed there, Nudie. You were talking about having kids go work in the school cleaning the bathrooms. That's a different thing than, hey, you've got chores at home. I think every kid needs to have chores at home. And I'm in favor of allowance for chores, sure. That's a good start. Good idea, Newt. But when you're talking about taking jobs away from mom and dad, I'm not in favor of it. When you're talking about, you know, the apprentice child labor edition, again, not in favor of it. Bad. All I can say is shame. Anyway, the Metro Bank today, I don't know if you saw this, they filed filed a bankruptcy claim against Linda Thompson's $52,000 mortgage. The mayor here of Harrisburg, again, you know, she's supposed to be the one that's going to guide us through, the economic troubles of the city of Harrisburg, yet her own property, they're going to foreclose on. And I was thinking about today, maybe the Occupy people could occupy her foreclosure. But then it was said to me, no, nobody likes her. And she's just, the property that's in question, and this, you can't make this stuff up. The property in question was the former headquarters of this operation called Love Ship, a nonprofit entity that counseled residents on their mortgage. I mean, really? Can you not see the hilarity in that? She's counseling other people on how to save their mortgage, and she's in foreclosure? Oh, heaven help us. Her spokesman said, well, you know, it's a personal matter, and it has no bearing on her being able to run the city of Harrisburg. And I got to disagree with you. I think it has a lot of bearing. If you can't pay your own bills, how are you going to pay the city's bills? Just a quick thought, you know. Fortunately, the folks in Los Angeles, they have the city council there in L.A. voted 11-0 to declare a resolution that corporations are not entitled to the same rights as people. Corporations are corporations. People are people. I'm in favor of that. In fact, I'm actually in favor of changing the Constitution to make sure that happens. You know, come up with something like $2 billion in penalties. But nobody ever is held accountable. I mean, and that's my problem. Well, that's okay. No problem. Now, this guy is saying, this Cardona is saying, look, you know, they tried, right, in 2009, they tried to go after two of the big Bear Stearns guys, the two big hedge fund managers. And they were found not guilty. And his premise is, look, the government has to question the ability of a jury to find charge and so out of control that, he's right. We simply can't go after them because we've allowed them to get too big, which is why I've always been in favor of breaking these things up and making them smaller and manageable. Because now they're actually more powerful than government. And which is why I think so many people were so happy to see this U.S. District Judge Jed Rekoff throw that $285 million settlement back to the SEC, saying, not enough. You need to start holding people accountable. And what's going on is nobody's accountable to this. There's no one accountable whatsoever. And I think, you know, when they sign off on these things, someone has to be held accountable. Just like the settlement the other day with the miners, with the Upper Big Branch mine. Nobody's really being held accountable. There's no liability.
Hitting many state governments. Matthew Gardner, Executive Director of the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy, is co-author of the report.
Found that 68 of these companies like DuPont, Intel, Wells Fargo, and GE, have figured out ways not only to pay zero in state taxes, but to get tax refunds despite being hugely profitable over the last 3 years.
Gardner says common sense reforms by the states could make sure that corporations pay their fair shares, but many state governments continue to give these corporations tax breaks. If Congress doesn't move fast to extend federal unemployment benefits, 2 million jobless workers could lose their lifeline. Chris Owens, executive director of the National Employment Law Project, says the damage done should Congress fail to extend the benefits goes far beyond those 2 million unemployed Americans.
6 million will be affected in that manner over the course of the next year. This will be a huge body blow to the economy. It would suck $90 billion in revenues out of the economy. It could cost us 500,000 jobs that would otherwise be created or maintained.
Washington, by saying, you know what, we want to put a small surtax on the very, very, the upper crust. The folks way up at the top. Because, you know what, the people down at the bottom need it. They need it to consume some more. Because if you're thinking in terms of the economy, you need consumers. This idea that, oh, regulations are killing jobs, you can deregulate everything. If nobody has a dime in their pocket, there is no economic activity. None whatsoever. But they're willing to frustrate. They're willing to filibuster this. And isn't it frustrating? I mean, at some point...
In Missoula, Montana, on a concept even more bizarre than declaring zygotes to be persons with full citizenship rights. It was a vote on overturning last year's democracy-killing decision by the U.S. Supreme Court in the now infamous Citizens United case. A narrow five-man majority of the court had decreed that abracadabra, lifeless, soulless corporations are henceforth persons with human political rights. Moreover, said the five, these tongueless entities must be allowed to speak by dumping unlimited sums of their corporate cash into our election campaigns, thus giving them a far bigger voice than us real-life persons. Missoulians, of course, cannot single-handedly overrule the Supremes, but they can be in the forefront of a grassroots movement demanding a constitutional amendment to reverse the court's perverse ruling. And that's just what Missoulians did, with a whopping 75% of voters calling on Congress to send such an amendment to the states for prompt ratification. This is Jim Hightower saying, hey, we can all be Missoulians. People in California, Colorado, Maine, Vermont, Wisconsin, and elsewhere are pushing such resolutions. For information on how to get your city and state to join in this call, go to wethepeoplecampaign.org/toolkit. Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm. For me, I don't think there was, well, other than one person against the war. Her name was Jeanette Rankin. She was the sole vote cast against World War II, a devout pacifist, committed pacifist. The first woman elected to Congress, oddly enough, a Republican from Montana. She has the distinction of being the only person to vote against World War II, yet one of 50 to vote against World War I. So interesting that she had followed her through her whole life. She actually never questioned and never turned back from her vote. She stood by it the entire time, stood her ground, and never apologized for it. In fact, she actually led a campaign against the Vietnam War in 1968 when she was 87 years old. And, you know, her premise was, look, you know, I can't fight in the war. I'm not going to send someone else's child off to die if I can't go myself. And she voted her conscience. Well, obviously she was voted out. And then she was reelected in the 1940, right before you were going to have to vote on going to World War II. So interesting. Some of the things that she did try to propose in 1919, Agency France Press reports, the U.S. Air Force dumped the cremated partial remains of at least 274 American troops in a landfill before halting the secretive practice in 2008, according to a report by the Washington Post. The procedure was never formally authorized or disclosed to senior Pentagon officials who conducted a review of the cremation policies of Dover Air Force Base. And that's where everybody comes back through, just about. Nor was the dumping ever disclosed to the family of the fallen troops who had authorized the military to dispose of their remains in a respectful and dignified manner, according to the Post. This is the part that got me. An additional group of 1,762 remains, which could not undergo DNA testing because they were so badly damaged or burned, were also disposed in this manner. What was the manner? They were dumped in a Virginia landfill. Just dumped. I mean, stop and think about that. Of the 6,300 remains that came through Dover Air Force Base, 1,762 of them, according to this article, dumped in a landfill. You know, I kind of got to ask the question. You know, these are the heroes, right? These are the people that we're putting on a pedestal. This is how we treat them. And I go back to, you know, I had a conversation this week, you know, about my views of the military. I remember those people coming back from Vietnam, broken, battered, missing.